Hello and welcome everyone to another episode of Lex Plug Podcast. We're talking about a major Supreme Court decision today, Furman v. Georgia.
No way. I've been itching to delve into Furman. That 1972 ruling totally reshaped how we view capital punishment.
Exactly. It threw a spotlight on whether the death penalty was being handled in a cruel, arbitrary, or discriminatory manner.
I love that. The 8th and 14th Amendments came front and center here, right? People started asking if the death penalty violated those constitutional protections.
Absolutely. And that question arose in the context of William Furman, a black man with mental deficiencies, convicted of murder, and two others, Jackson and Branch, facing death for rape.
Really powerful stuff. The broader issue was whether inconsistent and erratic death sentences violated the Constitution's prohibition on cruel and unusual punishment.
Yes, and cruel and unusual isn't a static phrase. It changes with societal norms, right?
So true. By the time we got to Furman, the court was already leaning toward a more modern interpretation of the Eighth Amendment.
Absolutely. But Furman's opinion wasn't a neat, unified statement. It was a short per curiam with multiple concurring opinions.
Wait, multiple concurrences in one big chunk of a ruling? That sounds messy.
It sure was. Each justice had distinct reasons for finding the system flawed. Some cared about discrimination, some cared about evolving decency, and some about inconsistent application.
Amazing. Justice Douglas honed in on how capital punishment was disproportionately used against minorities and the poor, right?
Yes, he basically said the death penalty had been weaponized against vulnerable groups. Talk about a bold stance.
Oh, that's big. And then Justice Stewart famously said it was like being struck by lightning. Totally random, right?
Exactly. That lightning analogy really soared. It implied that who lived or died felt more like a freak accident than a fair process.
I'm listening. And Justice White thought because the death penalty was used so rarely, it failed any real purpose. Right?
Yes, indeed. He basically said if it's seldom imposed, it can't effectively deter crime or consistently punish wrongdoing.
Interesting. Then Brennan and Marshall went even further. They said the death penalty was unconstitutional, period, full stop.
Right. They took that moral stance, anchored in human dignity and the evolving standards of decency.
Now, the dissenters had a different perspective. Chief Justice Berger warned that the Supreme Court was stepping on legislative toes, correct?
Absolutely. He suggested that the court was overreaching, intruding into a policy space meant for lawmakers.
Of course. And Justice Blackmun, personally opposed to the death penalty, still felt the Constitution permitted it, right?
Yes, which is a real testament to separating personal feelings from constitutional interpretation.
Seriously? That's such a split. Some justices were morally opposed, but they still said, we must follow the Constitution.
Exactly. And that fractured stance led to a massive shakeup. 4 years of no executions nationwide.
Amazing. States had to scramble. They rushed to create guided discretion statutes so the death penalty wouldn't be arbitrary.
Absolutely. It was a direct consequence of Furman forcing a complete reevaluation of capital punishment laws.
I see what you mean. With these new protocols, states tried to regulate which crimes qualified and how juries decided death or not.
Yes, but the big question remains, did these reforms really solve issues like racial bias or unpredictability?
Exactly. Studies show that minorities still face disproportionate death sentences even after the changes. It's complicated.
So true. Which leads us to ask, did Furman make things better or was it just a temporary band-aid?
Could be both. It exposed the flaws, but wasn't a cure-all. That's typical of many Supreme Court rulings, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's a hallmark of a landmark case. Spotlighting the problem without fully fixing it.
Now we're talking. And that's why the conversation about the constitutionality of the death penalty rages on.
Yes, it does. Let's pivot to the constitutional framework. The Eighth Amendment's ban on cruel and unusual punishment has historical roots in prior cases.
Trop v. Dulles and Weems v. United States definitely expanded what cruel and unusual could mean over time.
Exactly. And then Furman took that broader reading, focusing on how sentences were handed down, not just on the punishment itself.
Wait, hold up. So it wasn't just, is death too harsh? It was also, is death handed out fairly, right?
Precisely. The concern was that juries had too much discretion, which made sentencing unpredictable, and discriminatory.
Absolutely. That's where Stewart's lightning comment hits home. Randomness can equate to injustice.
And that randomness often impacted racial minorities the most. Justice Douglas hammered that point.
Yes, he tied it back to equality under the 14th Amendment, saying the uneven application was unconstitutional.
Meanwhile, Chief Justice Berger and other dissenters felt the legislature should decide the fairness of capital punishment.
Now that's a classic tension, judicial activism versus legislative authority. It's a constant push and pull.
For sure. Furman is a prime example of the court stepping in to say, we might not ban it outright, but we see major problems here.
Exactly. A fractured court can still produce massive change, as we saw with the 4-year halt in executions.
Amazing, right? States had to scramble for new statutes to refine how they applied the death penalty. It was total upheaval.
I see your point. Then we got the guided discretion approach, culminating in Gregg v. Georgia, which sort of brought back the death penalty with conditions.
Yes, Gregg said, okay, if you structure it more, we'll allow it. But the fundamental question of bias remains.
Exactly. Do guidelines actually eliminate prejudice? Human judgment's always a factor, so perfection is tough.
So true. That's why Furman's legacy lives on. It's an ongoing reminder of the tension between fairness and finality.
Now I'm curious, how do you see Furman influencing our broader sense of constitutional protections?
Oh, it expanded the notion that punishments must align with evolving standards of decency. A living constitution concept.
Absolutely, and that ties back to how society's morals do shift over time, influencing Eighth Amendment interpretation.
Right, just look at how seldom the death penalty is applied today compared to decades ago. The conversation keeps evolving.
You're kidding! That means Furman was more than just a single ruling. It was a cultural pivot for the entire justice system.
Yes, and the opinions themselves. Stewart, Douglas, Brennan, Marshall, are all taught in law schools to show the range of judicial thinking.
Exactly. They each tackle different angles: race, procedural fairness, morality, legislative power. It's a masterclass in perspective.
Tell me more. Some see Furman as an example of the court's willingness to intervene where states fail citizens.
Absolutely. Others feel the court overreaches when it gets this involved. It's a huge debate that hasn't truly ended.
So true, and that's what keeps Furman relevant. It addresses fundamental questions about justice, equality, and the role of courts.
Now let's talk about that famous metaphor again. Stewart's lightning line. It really dramatized the issue of randomness, right?
Totally. It said, in effect, you could get the death penalty just because you drew the short straw, not because your crime was uniquely heinous.
Yes. People need a system where punishment fits the crime reliably, not by some fluke.
Exactly. That fluke aspect undermines confidence in the justice system. It's unusual in the sense of being unevenly applied.
Absolutely. So the court was basically pointing out that the state had failed to set a consistent standard for its most severe punishment.
Yes, and the Eighth Amendment demands more than that. When life is on the line, you can't have a random lottery.
Wow, that's a powerful image. Life or death by lottery. Let's pivot to the racial disparity angle. How critical was that in Furman?
Crucial. Justice Douglas said if we see a pattern of targeting the most vulnerable, like minorities, that's a 14th Amendment issue as well.
Exactly. Equality under the law means you can't have a system that tips the scales based on race or economics.
Now, the dissent basically countered with, is it the court's job to fix that or the legislature's?
Yes, that's the crux. Should the court blow the whistle on a broken system or let lawmakers handle it?
Of course. And Chief Justice Berger's stance was basically, we shouldn't be legislating from the bench.
Absolutely. That tension remains a hallmark of many modern debates regarding the scope of judicial power.
I see what you mean. Furman's a key example in arguments about whether the court leads societal change or just follows it.
Right. It's super relevant whenever we talk about moral issues in law, like same-sex marriage or abortion, where the court steps in.
So true. And it doesn't always produce a neat, tidy result. Furman certainly didn't.
Exactly. That 4-year moratorium ended with states revamping their statutes. Then Gregg validated those new frameworks.
Yes, but we still question if the new frameworks actually sidestep bias effectively or just formalize it.
Whoa, that's deep. Even with guided discretion and mandated guidelines, the human element can't be fully eradicated?
Precisely. People bring subconscious biases into their decisions, no matter how many procedural steps you set up.
Love it. It's a classic question. Can law truly eliminate prejudice, or can it only manage it?
Exactly. Furman underscored that question on the biggest stage, capital punishment.
I'm listening. It propelled states to adopt standardized standards, bifurcated trials, aggravating factors, all that.
Right, in hopes of injecting objectivity. But even today, critics say the scales aren't balanced.
Absolutely. Just look at continuing arguments that the death penalty remains racially skewed. That conversation hasn't died.
Nope, it's alive and well. In fact, Furman is cited often in modern appeals for that very reason.
Exactly. And that's why we can't dismiss it as just a historical footnote.
So, from a teaching perspective, Furman is huge. Law students see how a deeply splintered court can still shape the legal landscape.
Now we're talking. The variety of concurring opinions gives a real sense of complexity in constitutional law.
People often think Supreme Court rulings are monolithic. Furman shows the reality. You can have profound disagreement in a majority.
Seriously? And that disagreement can still halt executions nationwide for years. That's powerful.
Yes, it reveals that even a 5-4 or 5-3-1 type scenario can have massive practical impact.
Exactly. And for the dissenters, it was a wake-up call about the court's potential to alter policy drastically.
Right, especially for those who believe major policy decisions belong in Congress or state legislatures.
So true. Let's remember these were actual people facing death. It's not abstract for defendants like Furman, Jackson, and Branch.
Absolutely. The gravity of the punishment magnifies the moral and legal stakes.
Of course, it's not a trivial debate. Lives were literally on the line, which intensifies the scrutiny.
Yes, that's why the Eighth Amendment has such force. Cruel and unusual is a serious label.
Wait, what? Some states basically rewrote entire penal codes because of this one ruling? That's massive.
It truly was. And while the court didn't say, ban capital punishment forever, it forced reflection on its methods and fairness.
Yep, a forced reflection that changed America's conversation around the death penalty.
I love that. A shift from, do we allow the death penalty, to, how do we ensure it's not arbitrary or discriminatory?
Good point. That's a totally different focus. Procedural fairness rather than an outright moral condemnation.
Exactly. Brennan and Marshall were the ones who championed the moral condemnation angle.
Right. They basically said capital punishment is inherently incompatible with human dignity, no matter how it's applied.
Now, that's a stance that resonates with modern abolitionists who echo that viewpoint.
It sure does. But the system ended up with a narrower approach. Limit arbitrariness, keep the penalty in some form.
Precisely. And we see that compromise in Gregg and subsequent rulings that upheld guided discretion statutes.
Furman laid the groundwork, though. It's like the seed from which all these modern rules sprouted, right?
Absolutely. Without Furman, states might never have restructured their death penalty laws so thoroughly.
Interesting. So in a way, Furman was both a stop sign and a yield sign. It halted executions, but also directed new legal traffic.
That's a great analogy. It forced a reroute, not an end to the journey.
Now we're talking metaphors. Let's switch gears. How did the legal community react at the time? Were they shocked?
Many were. Some welcomed it as a triumph of justice. Others saw it as judicial overkill. Law reviews lit up with opinions.
I bet a fractured opinion with a per curiam label is catnip for legal scholars. Endless angles to analyze.
Oh, absolutely. It's become a staple in constitutional law courses, showcasing how the court can shape critical issues.
Totally. And it's also a lesson on how the law intersects with race, class, and morality all at once.
Yes. Furman is less about one man's fate and more about the structural fairness of the system.
Now, can we say that structural fairness is still unresolved? We continue to see claims of unjust application.
So true. We have statistical evidence that suggests certain demographic groups face harsher penalties.
Absolutely. And that's exactly why Furman's message about arbitrariness still matters. The debate is ongoing.
Yes, it's a living debate. Even if states implement checklists, human decisions can't be fully programmed.
Exactly. Maybe no system is perfect, but we try to get as close as possible to unbiased justice.
True. And that's the challenge. Furman just set us on a path to keep tackling these issues.
Now, thinking big picture, Furman is about more than the death penalty, isn't it? It's about constitutional interpretation flexing with time.
Exactly. It's about the living nature of the Constitution and the court's role in shaping that evolution.
Absolutely. So if we see a future shift in moral consensus, the court could revisit capital punishment again, right?
Potentially, yes. The court can pivot if it feels the standards of decency have fundamentally changed.
Now we're talking. That's why Furman is so important. It's proof that the court can and will act if it sees a constitutional mismatch.
Exactly. And it encourages ongoing dialogue about how we punish, why we punish, and whether we punish too severely.
Amazing. I find it so compelling that one case can trigger decades of debate. That's the power of Supreme Court jurisprudence.
Totally. And each new generation of law students examines it from fresh angles, ensuring Furman endures.
Yes, indeed. Let's talk about some key quotes. Stewart's lightning strike is obviously the big one.
Right. Brennan's stance that the death penalty is unique in its severity is also often cited.
I see. And Marshall's argument that any form of capital punishment violates human dignity resonates with modern activists.
Totally. Those lines underscore the moral weight the justices brought to their opinions.
Which is why this case is both legal and moral in nature, a blend that rarely fades over time.
Precisely. The moral dimension is what makes it so profound. It's not just about procedure.
Exactly. Now, let's mention Chief Justice Berger's point. Capital punishment is a legislative matter. Was that widely accepted?
Some agreed, some disagreed. It's the classic tug of war. Does the court interpret or also shape social policy?
I guess that debate will never fully vanish. Judicial activism versus judicial restraint. Eternal.
So true. Furman is an emblem of that dynamic. It's why people still cite it when the court steps in on big social issues.
Exactly. Let's do a quick reflection. Furman created a 4-year execution hiatus. That's huge.
Seriously, no one was executed during that time. It forced states to think, how do we fix this?
Yes, and it was only resumed when protocols like guided discretion were introduced in Gregg v. Georgia.
Right, which means Furman was the catalyst. Without it, states might have continued with the old arbitrary methods.
No doubt. So in that sense, Furman's effect was revolutionary, even if it didn't permanently abolish the death penalty.
Exactly. Some call it the greatest near-abolition moment in U.S. history, but partial retraction of capital punishment might be more accurate.
I'm listening. So from a historical standpoint, it's up there with Brown v. Board in terms of transformative potential for its domain?
Yes, though Brown tackled segregation, Furman tackled capital punishment. Different fields, same level of profound impact.
Interesting. Let's talk enforcement. Even with new laws, people argue we're still seeing racial bias in capital cases.
Absolutely. The question remains, can better guidelines truly exterminate deep-rooted biases?
Exactly. If we can't fix the human element, do we keep trying to refine the system, or do we scrap the ultimate penalty?
Precisely the debate. And Furman continues to be central to that conversation.
I see. Given all that, it's clear why this case remains a crucial study in constitutional law classes.
Yes, it covers equal protection, due process, Eighth Amendment, legislative versus judicial roles, a full spectrum.
Now we're talking. It's like a jigsaw puzzle of legal principles all converging in one dramatic case.
Exactly, and the fractured opinions show the complexity of forging consensus on life and death issues.
No way. That level of disagreement within the majority is so rare, yet so impactful.
Totally. It shaped how states approached the biggest penalty in the book, execution.
All right, what's next? Let's weigh final thoughts. Does Furman remain the hallmark for capital punishment debates?
I'd say yes. It's the foundation. Anytime we talk about fairness in sentencing, Furman's ghost is there.
Exactly. It's a mirror we hold up to see if we're still making sentencing decisions like lightning strikes.
Absolutely. If anything, it ensures we can't ignore the possibility of arbitrariness in the system.
Amazing. That kind of legacy is rare. Furman truly redefined how we conceptualize the death penalty.
So true. And it's why discussions like this matter, so we keep learning from it.
Exactly. Thank you for this deep dive, by the way. I've learned so much.
My pleasure. It's always good to revisit these pivotal rulings. Keeps us sharp and morally attuned.
Seriously. And hopefully our listeners got a clearer sense of where Furman fits in legal history.
Yes, it was a massive pivot. It said, hey, we do not necessarily ban capital punishment, but we definitely can't keep doing it randomly.
Right on. Encouraging states to craft guidelines was a big step forward. Though the debate isn't over, progress was made.
Exactly. And as new challenges arise, issues of mental health, innocence, racial bias, Furman's spirit guides the conversation.
Great point. The law never stops evolving, and we can credit Furman for a good chunk of that forward motion.
Yes, that's the beauty of constitutional law. It adapts, influenced by landmark decisions like these.
I love it. So as we wrap up, any final parting words on Furman's significance?
It remains a testament to how the Constitution's interpretation can drastically reshape criminal justice. The conversation endures.
So true. Well, that's a wrap for today's Lex Plug podcast. Thanks for tuning in, everyone.
Now we're talking. Keep exploring, keep questioning, and we'll be back with more deep dives soon.
Absolutely. In our next episode, we might even compare Furman's legacy to Greg v. Georgia. Stay tuned.
Love it. I'm Host 1, signing off with gratitude for all our listeners.
And I'm Host 2. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. Until next time, take care.
Catch y'all later.
Bye for now.
Seriously, keep reading up on these cases. They're pivotal.
Will do. Stay curious, folks.
Yes, always.
See you again soon.
Thanks for listening.
You bet.
And remember, the law is never static.
Exactly. It's alive.
We'll keep this momentum going in our next episode.
Sounds like a plan.
Hope you learned something new.
Totally did.
Excellent. Until next time, listeners.
Stay informed, everyone.
And stay engaged with justice.
Absolutely.
All right. Talk soon.
Later.
Bye.
Bye.